NextGen Sales Leaders has just launched a new office hours in our free school community. You're going to get access to the exact recordings that we had with the students inside the group. So these are B2B business owners, CROs, chief marketing officers, people that are trying to scale B2B businesses from anywhere from zero all the way up to $20, $30, $40 million. So if you want to see the advice I give them, go ahead and watch this video. Now, we're going to be doing this every single week on Thursdays. If you are not part of the free school community, there'll be a link somewhere in the description below. Go ahead and join. There's a free classroom section. All of my really great content that's 100% free is located in the school group, so go check that out now and get access. If you don't have access, you can always contact me on LinkedIn from Benjamin Aaron Reed and just send me a DM. Otherwise, let's get into it. Let's get into the office hours, the very first one. I will see you guys in there. Thanks so much.
Hey, Louis. How's it going?
Hey, Ben. Doing great. How about you?
Good, good. So what are you up to? Good to meet you. And what do you think would be useful for you?
Yeah. So right now, I am kind of working out, building like a consistent lead flow system. Because I call it running a business, but it was really freelance for the past like 4 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was in the agency space. So it's not like it's unfamiliar territory to me. Mm-hmm. Even in that agency, we didn't really have like a growth system in place. Mm-hmm. We were just working with SEO clients, and I was kind of managing like backend, setting up the automations and everything. And content managing. So right now I'm focused on reaching out to med spas. Offer is like voice AI and marketing systems to help out take their lead flow. But yeah, like I just having some difficulty getting like consistent outreach results and people on the phone. Like I'm still getting warm leads, and I just landed a couple of clients this week, but I just don't want to get back to square one once, like, let's say those contracts end, or once they are after month one, and they're on like a maintenance ongoing retainer.
Interesting. So I used to own a med spa, so I actually know that avatar very well. I was a 10% owner in a med spa in Dallas, Fort Worth. And so I actually had to go in and come up with the systems to manage the lead flow. And I actually set up, this is back in like 2017, I was buying Facebook ads. Back then it was just crazy. I was getting ads for like $1 a piece. Now at the time I didn't know how to convert them well enough. Like I didn't have enough of an understanding, because remember, this is like close to 10 years ago. So I was kind of still in the early stages of my marketing career. I was really good at sales, but not great at marketing. And I certainly wasn't great at automations at the time. But what I was doing was, I'm sure there's like videos. There's probably some funny videos of me at MedSpa. Let me see if I can find one. That's actually a really funny thing if I can find it. Let me sign back in. I'll see if I can find one while we're on the call. But there's a funny video of me literally, because it was a toe fungus removal as well as tattoo removal as well as like laser hair removal and that kind of stuff. And so I have these funny videos where I was like, screw it, I'll be the guy like on the table. And I don't think I had like toe fungus, very clean toes. And I remember just being like, just use the stupid tool on me. This is a very expensive $30,000 tool where they like zap the toe fungus. And I remember it like, it sizzled a little bit. And she's like, oh, you actually have some toe fungus. And I'm like, what the hell? but it crushed. I mean, we ran it. It was like a 2-minute ad. It was basically like, all right, guys, we're now going to show you how we remove toe fungus. It was basically that. Okay. And so the patient here, and I was the patient, has come in and we're complaining that he's been having some issues with toe fungus on the toes. We use this medical grade equipment, and he just basically just sold. It basically just explained the process of what they did. And we said, we have a 99% success rate of eliminating very hard to extinguish, toe fungus. And so she's like saying this as she's like doing the thing. So I'm having the cameraman zoom in on my toes and like do the whole thing. And it was just all about the entire idea was, it was a visual hook of a guy getting his toes defungatized. So I think one, people wanted to see somebody with toe fungus, even though I didn't have it. And two is, at least I didn't see it. And two was that it was like this kind of like ongoing like thing where they could see the actual thing occurring, so they could visualize the after effect. And then me saying, yeah, I've been doing this for weeks and now like you should have seen my toes before this, you know, something like that. But it crushed. So in my experience, like same thing with laser removal, is like actually videos of the laser removal process is very interesting. Or if like you can get like arm hair removal or something like that and actually show the process, those types of video ads were crushing back 7, 8 years ago. And I think they would still crush today in a local market. Anyways, I don't know if that's helpful, but that's like for the client itself. But to get the clients, you could actually run the same ad. So you could say, we work with video, we work with medical spas, and here's one of the ads we created. I don't know if you do ads, but like, you get the point. It's like, here's an example of us going in and creating this video, and this generated, this ad generated, I don't know, like 4,556 inbound calls to this med spa. So you actually show them what you've created in the past. That's just like one idea. But if I was doing spa sales, the problem is you have a chicken and egg problem as a freelancer, is that like any agency has a typically their constraint is what we call a supply constraint, not a demand constraint. And so, you know, supply and demand. So demand is I want somebody, I need clients. Supply is I needed to fulfill for clients. And the problem is that you can probably go find clients, but as soon as you find them, you're now filled on your capacity and now you are stuck delivering for the client. And so you have this kind of circular kind of merry-go-round of what you're describing of like, I'm going to deliver and then I'm going to run out of the client. So the key thing there is you need to create playbooks that describe how you deliver for the client. And you have to build processes and systems. And so do you mind if I show you something? Give you a sense.
I don't mind.
Let's go to screen two. So I will show you here. Okay. So like I am obsessed with Notion for this reason. A lot of people already use Notion, but I'll explain how I think about it right here. So let me go into next gen. Okay. So as an example, you can see here under this expectations, sorry, getting started doc, all of my salespeople have to go through this, what we call a 3-day challenge. So just to give you an example of this is like a very thorough documentation on how we do sales and how we think about the sales tech and how we think about the ideal customer profile, et cetera. So if I go into any one of these, like the SDR cheat sheet, it will take me to a Notion doc or a Google Sheet or something like that with a lesson that talks about this. So this is the cheat sheet. This will open up another one. But my point is that like I've thoroughly thought about how do I deliver my service, and I've documented it into these very clear like swipe files and methodologies and flow diagrams. I use Lucidchart and just I use Google Sheets a shit ton, personality matrix. For me, what I offer is I offer one lead generation through cold email. And number two is I offer done for you and done with you sales operations. And then I have a offer to just give my entire training materials to scale an inside sales team away. On the low end, my offer is I support people from $0 to $1 million in revenue as a coach. So I charge monthly to get access to me on calls like this where I guide them. And then they get access to a Slack channel and they can ask me questions daily where I can support them. And it's more like one-on-one support where I get to know their need and their want and I guide them. Kind of like I'm doing with you right now, but like to a much greater degree and much more specific in the long term. But the point is that I'm trying to make you is you cannot scale your business until you have something like this. Now, I'll give you something right now just so that you have it. Let me go back here. And I don't know why the Notion doc, that's why. Okay, so I'll go here and I'm just going to type in playbooks. So I created a whole methodology called the 4 C's playbook. Okay, so this is my whole system on how I create playbooks to scale my business. Like if I could give one thing to an entrepreneur at an agency level, it would be this document. Because it's not actually how to sell, it's how to consistently create systems to allow yourself to get out of delivery. Let me send this to you here. This in itself will save you, what will allow you to do what you want to do, which is like, you can hire somebody to do the work for you after you've created the systems. This will take you several months to create the playbooks. But the point is it's very simple. All you're doing is like coming up with all the steps of the process, like I talked about here. So this is all the things I need people to know. And then I turn them into videos. And then I turn them into playbooks. And the playbooks uses a transcript from the video. And then I put it into ChatGPT. So I've even built in there, which you'll see, under ChatGPT, playbook creator. So I can then go take a playbook. For example, I created a playbook today, actually, on fulfilling for clients. I'll show you an example here. And let me copy this. So here's a transcript from a video I did. Let me actually just show you this. I'll show you the actual video transcript. So I was on the call with a with one of my guys, and let me share. And I created this video. So essentially, it was like this. So I said something along the lines of, I just started recording into script. I like to script because it gives you this very clean transcript.
Okay, what's up, guys? We are going to be going over how we set up aliases. I have to do this for every client. So every client that comes on, I have to create an alias for them.
Okay, so this is describing the process of how we do this. So all I did was into script when you record, and all I do is just click record. I record screen here, record into script, and then it ends up looking like this, where you can see it all. And it's very nice because I can then go into Underlord here, which is like a fancy, it's a funny name for AI. And I can remove filler words. I can remove word gaps. It allows you just to quickly use this. By the way, I also use this for my podcast editing too, which is really nice. So you grab the transcript, and then I just take that transcript and I put it into, hold on, come on. This, and all I do is just literally, it's already pre-built custom GPT that I created, and it goes, it will literally create the entire playbook for me. So it will tell me, like, I usually skip the camcorder method because that's the video I created, but then it goes in and like it actually like creates all of this, like has these specific methodology of doing it. And so I don't even have to think about it. I just copy this and I put into Notion doc, and then it sits there, and I'm essentially good to go. So I think that like the first thing you have to, the reason I'm saying all this is that I'm an agency owner for a little while now, and the number one problem you're going to have is a fulfillment problem, not a demand gen problem. So you got to get your systems correct. And I call it, there's PPTP is my acronym. I stole it from Dan Martell, but it's, he has a, something called TP or something like that, but I expand it. So PPTP is puppy process training people. So if you don't know what to do, puppy. So you act like a puppy, you sniff around, you play a little bit, you figure it out. Don't record anything, don't write anything down yet. Just try to figure it out what you're doing first. And record yourself doing that. Then process, puppy process training people. So process is write down the minimum viable steps you think you need to do. And then once you've run it through the actual cycle on that process a number of times, then do training, which is record. And the training is part of the playbooks, which it really could be PP, puppy process, playbooks, people. It could be four P's, not that I'm saying that out loud. But it's puppy process, playbooks, people. But the training is the playbooks, where you create a documented training, a video where you actually do the thing. And then you take the transcript, put it into the GPT lesson I told you, and then it will turn it into a documentation. You put that in Notion, and now you've gotten the first part of your process done. And then you just do that for every part of your business. And so the idea is that when people come into your business as a hire, so you hire another person to do what you have to do, you then say, here's my playbooks. You got to learn this. You test them on it when you hire them. If they don't pass by 90%, you don't work with them. And now you have a little MVP operational model to go scale your business around. That will take you 3 to 6 months. months to perfect, and it's never over. Like every day I go in and I'm like, oh, I forgot this lesson, or oh, I need to do this. So that's the reason I was updating it, because we changed the process a little bit and I just figured it out again. So I think that before you try to scale, take this client you just got, use the playbook creation model I gave you, and then go build the playbooks. And then the first next time you do it, hire another guy at like a fraction of your price. See if he can learn it and see if he can fulfill for the client on one client. And if he's done that, now you've removed yourself from the doing and you can go and you can scale. So that's the answer to your question, I think.
No, it definitely is. I'm glad I shut up, because I was about to, once you were talking about just setting up the actual agency, I was about to say like, no, like I've already set up some of the systems, hired a letter, blah, blah, blah. But then just seeing your level of backend systems compared to what I've got going on, it's, I've got some work to do. So yeah, it's crazy, man. And everything that you said definitely echoes with that. I'd say I've been on, like, realized this path probably like 3 months ago, like how to transition into actually running an agency versus what I was doing freelancer wise. So that's why I productized the service offering. So it's just kind of like a package offer. It's the same thing, but it might be more complex for some people, less complex for other people. But it's not like I'm doing ads for this person, social media content for another person, marketing systems for another person. Like that's what I was doing, and too much.
Yeah, exactly.
So now it's really just setting up the marketing systems, like voice AI, and then lead nurturing, not necessarily lead gen. But you are right. Like setting up the, this isn't even something I thought about. Setting up like the, what do you call it? The four P's for even like the developers. Cause I have a training set up for the setters, like the sales team, but not for someone to replace me. I figured I would just hire someone to like say, hey, go build out the automation. Like this is what we need and go. But then I'm still very hands-on. So
yeah, I have a playbook for every single. So think about it like this. And Dan Martell talks about this a lot. So I don't want to pretend like these are all my ideas, but the idea is you are getting a sense of where your time is best spent. And so you want to kind of think of it like a matrix of like, you know, very difficult to do, like between A and Z. Like it's like on the left, it's like very simple, very hard and high skill required, versus like in the other y-axis is like very horrible to do, right? You just hate doing it. It's boring. It's hell for you. Maybe it's not for somebody else, but it's horrible for you, versus like high enjoyment. And so where like where you want to be is working on the thing that is highest skilled, highest value, like where it's like $1,000 an hour that you really, really enjoy and that you can do. That's where you want to spend your time. And generally speaking, you want to like offload all the other stuff. So if it's something that's like high skill, but you don't enjoy, if you're the only one who can do it for the time being, then you're stuck there. But the idea is, how do you find somebody that has the equal amount of skill, but they actually enjoy doing it, and then pay them to do it? And then if it's like the first thing you want to offboard, though, is not that. And also like the high enjoyment, low skill, you might still actually enjoy it. So that's still not the first thing you want to get rid of. You want to get rid of the shit you hate doing, and that's like really low skill. Because one, you can pay somebody $5 to $10, $15 an hour to do it, and you can train them out of it. So for me, like, come think about that matrix and then come up with like the small things that you hate doing, and then create playbooks around those things, and then hire for those things, and then replace yourself out of those things, and then go to the next level up. And at the end of the day, like, you can keep whatever you want in that top right corner. But for me, like, I spend 80 to 90% of my time at this point, like, thinking about people and how do I hire the right people and how do I create the right process to replace myself. So it's like, if I am spending too much time in the tactical weeds, I'm focused on the wrong problem. Now, what's allowed me to do that is that when I have cash, right? I've had some successful exits. Somebody else is coming in. I've had some successful exits. You know, I can afford to pay people. I also know how to manage people. I've hired over 500 people before. So like I know what it's like to deal with people and manage people. I would not recommend somebody trying to just do this from scratch if they have like never gone down this path before without like go abuse somebody else. Like go get hired by somebody else and be a manager for like a year at another company. And hopefully a good trainer, and they'll train you what to do. Otherwise, you're spending your own cash to go learn these lessons. And I did that. I mean, I got lucky and I got essentially wealthy business partners to support me. And I was supporting them, but they gave me a lot of freedom to go try things and learn on their dime. So I would say go find that first for the first 4 to 5 years for anybody who like doesn't have their own agency yet. And learn the skill set of hiring people, managing people, building playbooks, building systems, going through that cycle. Because if you do it the first time, you're probably going to screw it up. Now, that's fine if you're okay just like losing 5 times in a row. For me, it took, I think it was like 9 businesses before I hit one that actually worked. So if you're willing to just die 9 times, then fine. If you're not, then I would say go get paid by somebody else. But anyways, I don't know if that's helpful for you, but that's kind of how I think about the whole world around that.
No, I mean, I realized that too. Like, I already worked in the agency space back like 5 years ago. And then before that, I was doing sales roles 3 years. So I was the one building out a lot of the SOPs and everything as part of that agency. So probably just not trashing everything that I have from you. Like, I still have all the documents. So probably looking at what I can repurpose into what I'm doing now. No, everything that you're saying is just kind of like echoing things that I've kind of been thinking, like at the back of my mind, but not really taking action on, like hiring the right people, stuff like that. And I think even the setter that I've hired and some more people that I've been looking at hiring probably aren't, like I don't really have enough of a like weed out process, like you said there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where, you know, like I used to think coaches were a waste of time and I would be like, I'll just figure it out myself. But this is the thing, is that like the problem of entrepreneurship is not any particular tactical thing that you have to do. It's actually just knowing what to do, when to do it, and how to do it at the strategic level. Because the problem is there's too many action items to take. There's like literally thousands of little levers you can pull. And the core challenge of an entrepreneur is like, which lever do I pull now? And I think the problem is like there's the 4 standard levers that people talk about, which is like human capital, actual capital, like cash, technology, and content. You might throw an audience there too. And so the problem is if you pull any one of those triggers prematurely, you're probably hurting yourself. So like, for example, if you raise capital too early, you're giving up too much equity, and you're losing control of the business before you actually have established any type of product market fit. And another example is you hire somebody too early, but you actually don't know how to manage them. You don't know how to bullshit check them. And you don't have the systems for them to follow. And therefore, they're just kind of floating there and they're taking advantage of your ignorance and you don't even know it. And they don't even know it. They don't know they're taking advantage because they don't know what they're doing. So you have kind of the blind leading the blind. And so you can waste a lot of time with that. And then finally, the person like 3 months later leaves because they're like, I don't have enough structure and purpose in my life and I'm not learning from this guy. So then they quit on you. And now you're back to square one. So the orders of operation on entrepreneurship is like kind of the game. And the hard part about it is that there's no like obvious manual. They don't teach shit in school. They just certainly don't teach it when you're working for somebody else. It's not like the entrepreneur is going to come down and go, let me tell you why I made this decision. So that's why I think having a coach, just generally speaking, is very valuable. Mm-hmm. I pay anywhere from $3,000 a month to $20,000 a month for my coaches. Spiritual advisors to my fitness coach. I can do some pretty crazy handstand splits now because of that. Six pack abs, all that jazz that came from that. The ability to just do cold email. I hired a coach. Like before I was even offering cold email, I was like, oh my God, there's this whole new world of clay. I had to, about a year and a half ago, go find a coach. And I paid him $50,000 to learn how to do it. So the point is that like what coaches will do for you is they will fast track the learning. And it's kind of like the Alex Hormozi quote of, I'll pay any amount of money to know obvious truths. And the reason for that is that we die. Because we're going to die in 50 years. it takes far longer than you think it will take, and you can't figure it out fast enough. Otherwise, the market passes you by. So the thing is if you think, okay, I can go sell, say, I don't know, 40 of these med spa contracts in the next 12 months, but you can't do it because you're constrained on processes and systems and how to like scale it like a and bullshit detect your sales team. Well, you've just lost your cost of not spending the time on the coach was actually the revenue you could have generated if you had actually invested in the coach. So that's like my biggest advice to anybody is get a coach. And it's not because I'm a coach. I am a coach. I sell this offer of like supporting people like you on how do you see straight. But that's not why I'm doing it. I personally have 5+ coaches. I don't know how many I have to count them, but I have a lot of coaches because I just have realized I have blind spots. I make the wrong decisions. I need people to gut check me. And most of the time they're telling me shit I already knew, but they're just telling me to do it now. So anyways, that's like probably my second biggest piece of advice outside of the systems is go find a coach who can just bullshit detect you. And if you do want to work with me, I am a coach. So I was not incentivized to tell you that because of it, but it happens to be true. And I recommend anybody to go get a coach.
Okay. No, I mean, you were calling out a lot. It's like you said, you were calling out a lot of things that I knew, but just needed to be told to take action. So cool. And can I ask one more question?
Sure. I'm here, just so you know, for 28 more minutes. So.
Okay. So with that med spa client, they don't start until the 24th. So I do have some like buffer time before. So I'm wondering now if I should take on some of the other opportunities that have kind of just popped up. Like this week, it's been a crazy week. It's been like, it was dry before, and then this week, like everything came at once. So now I'm wondering, do I take on some of those other clients because there are other industries and it'd be pulling me into like, one of them wants me to do Google ads, one wants me to do social media marketing. So I don't want to run back into like the freelancer spiral of doing like anything for everybody. But I'm wondering if it'd be good cash flow wise in the meantime, or if my time is better spent building out these systems since I have like 3 weeks.
Do you mind if I ask what is your retainer you're charging? What is your business model? How much do you charge these guys? Is it hourly? Is it like a flat rate? And are there different packages for different offers? How do you think about that?
So the current core offer is there's like 3 different ones depending on the size of the project. It'd be $2,500. I haven't really priced out the middle one, and then capping at $5,000. Mm-hmm. One would probably be around $35,000, and that's the one-time setup fee of the entire voice AI and automation, and it also does reputation management. So it responds directly to people leaving reviews, can plan out their content and everything like that because it all integrates with Go High Level.
Mm-hmm.
So the one-time setup is that, and then it's ongoing maintenance, which is optional, but it's kind of a no-brainer.
How much is that, the maintenance?
So depending on the size, it could be $500 to $1,500. Just depends on what initial package.
And so you're charging, so say it again. So how much for the setup is?
$2,500 to $5,000, depending on. And then maintenance, $500 to $1,500.
And why is there a variance on the maintenance?
Just because if the med spa has, let's say, multiple people that handle the same service, and then it's getting multiple calendars involved into the integration. If they have a trickier CRM to integrate with, like I know some use like Jane app or something like everyone uses different HIPAA related, like med spa specific.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a factor too. Can they just use our like already preset like high level integration, or do they need like a custom build? So that's really the variance. It's if they can use kind of more of the templated version versus a custom build. Mm-hmm. There. And then so that's
You tried and tested? You're gonna understand why I'm asking these questions, because I heard your question about should I take on kind of ancillary opportunities that aren't core to the current ICP. So have you tested higher price points?
No, because this one, the current signed client, it was a warm lead, so I got her on the lowest package. But yeah, she's on the lowest.
Okay.
But she did
So
say.
I think right off the bat, you have a problem with price because the reality, have you ever done unit economic analysis in like a spreadsheet? Okay. So you want to do that. Now, what is unit economics? It is taking your cost of goods sold. And so you, if you say have a client, how much does it cost you in human capital and any other things that matter to deliver for that client? So for example, I can say that like technician sales leaders, if I charge, say, $5,000 a month, I know I'm going to spend around $3,000 a month on people internally to deliver to that client, which leaves me with $2,000, which doesn't include all my other stuff I have to spend, like commissions on salespeople, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to understand like what your operating margin is on cost. And then you also have to understand what your cost to acquire the customer is, as well as what your lifetime value is on that client. So generally speaking, service-based businesses, you want to be like a 10-to-1 on cost to acquire to LTV. And so like, and this is where people screw this up. They think lifetime value is like lifetime revenue per client, and it's not. It's lifetime net profit. So again, like we talked about, if you have, let's say you have a $5,000 offer per month and they stay on average 6 months, that's $30,000. Okay. And so $30,000, but you're spending $3,000 a month to fulfill. So that's $18,000. So your net is 12. Aside, let's assume there's no other cost, just for the sake of ease. So 12,000 bucks, right? So your lifetime value in that scenario is $12,000. So in order to make that sustainable, I would want to acquire a customer for less than $1,200 each in that scenario. So what's cost to acquire? Cost to acquire would be all your sales expense, all your marketing expense, all the sales stack that you use, any type of technology, media buying, all of that would go into cost to acquire. And so you want to keep that below $1,200 to give yourself a 10-to-1 on the LTV. Now, there are exceptions to that rule if you just want to deal with just like a shittier business. But if you want like a good business, I would say that's a good rule of thumb. So you have to figure out for yourself, like when you're pricing it out, you have to ask yourself now, like how much did it cost you to acquire that customer? So find that out and then multiply that by 10. And that's what you want your lifetime value to be. And then if you know your lifetime value at that point, you have to ask yourself, what is my lifetime value now? And that's the difference between where you are and where you need to be. And there's a couple ways you can do that. One is you can change the business model and you can charge more recurring things, or you can charge more upfront, or you can simply increase prices. So there's a bunch of different like levers to pull, but you first have to figure out like what your current lifetime value is and what your cost to fulfill is, so you can understand or your cost to fulfill over the amount of months they stay, just to understand your lifetime value, and then divide by 10 to come up with your ideal cost to acquire, and then compare that to your existing cost to acquire. So that's a good framework to think about, like, are you ready to scale? Generally speaking, for agency services, if you're doing it for yourself and you're okay just being a freelancer, the prices you described are fine. But if you want to ever get yourself out of the grind, you probably need to raise prices by 2 to 3x, I think. Because I can just say that I've looked at this and it costs money. Like good people cost money and you got to pay those people. And so that's why when people like try to charge me like a $1,500 for an agency fee, I'm like, you either suck or you don't know something, you know? Like, I don't know which one it is, right? Or you have some $5 an hour dude over in like Philippines, you know, doing it for you. So, which is nothing wrong with that guy, but I'm just saying I don't want that guy working on my project that I'm paying you money because there's more cost than just the 1500 I'm spending time. So I would say that's like a fundamental problem I'm noticing right off the bat. But to answer your question, you know, this is kind of like there's like different answers. And is it hi? How do I say your name? Is it Hi Tom? Hi Tom? You're muted. Star
Sorry,
seven.
like saying hi to your thumb. Hi, thumb.
Hi Tom. Hi Tom. I'll be with you in a second. I see you there. And thank you for being here. So I would say that, like, this is a more of a personal discussion. I don't know what your cash flow looks like. I would say that if you have money in the bank and you're not dying and you're good for 6 months, I would say don't take them on and get clearer on your ideal customer profile. I would say that, by getting clear on your ideal customer profile, like, really think about that. I think people, like, run ahead way too much and they're like, I just want med spas. Okay, I'm done. But be more specific than that. Like, I want med spas that are doing more than $1 million in revenue, that are located within 20 miles of central cities or cities in the United States. Like, maybe you've done that, but get very clear. And you say, I only offer those people this very thing. And if you're less than $1 million, don't take any clients outside of that as much as you want to. And that's the hardest thing on planet Earth to do, because it's so easy in the short term just to be like, yeah, I'll take that money, you know, but then you end up spending a good part of your life fulfilling that client, and you're now not scaling the business. So I would rather sacrifice the short term to scale in 12 to 24 months from now and have 30 of the clients that I wanted versus 5 of the shitty clients that are rotating all the time that are also harder to deal with. And you can't build processes and systems around it, because if you have SEO and AdWords and blah, 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 that means you have to create a process and system, and you have to manage those inputs. And that creates scaling at an agency level quite difficult, because quality becomes the key deciding factor on retention, and your quality is going to suffer because your processes probably aren't as good as they should be. And also your ability to manage people against the processes and hold them accountable isn't as good as they should be. So generally speaking, it's a very bad idea, even though it's like the clear pot of gold that just is so easy to snatch. So again, it's I don't know what your situation is, but if you have 6 months of livable income right now, I would say do not take on those clients, or tell them, hey, I can't take you on there, but if you guys want this service, I can do that, and just pitch them the other thing. But I would say immediately you need to double prices personally.
Yeah. I mean, just as a quick follow-up, because I want to take up Hatem's time. No, you're completely right. Like, I've worked with 15K contracts and stuff before. The reason why I've priced down is because the voice AI is like a new factor for me. So I didn't want to charge the premium prices and then run into some hiccups and then, have that all cascade down. But it's not like I don't like haven't done marketing automation. That's what I've primarily done for the last 5 years.
I would say even if you like this is kind of a tough one, because on one hand, you want to test price retention, which is like, can you sell it and can you maintain that price over the course of the relationship with those people? But you also do want to be able to get some guinea pigs to try out like your new thing. I know, because I've built a bunch of software and I've done that. Generally, as a rule of thumb, when it comes to software, is I don't like to go to market until I'm certain of the software. And that's like very counterintuitive to Lean Startup or Four Steps of the Epiphany, which, by the way, like, that's how I got started in entrepreneurship. So Steve Blank and Eric Schmidt or whatever his name is, like, they were my gods 12, 15 years ago. So I'm not like hating. I probably thought more about that methodology than anyone. And I was the guy that used to sell vaporware of like, let me show you this cool thing. And then I would just go sell it. The problem is that you're actually burning your reputation and people will hate you and you won't get any return referrals. So the key thing that I would say is like, it's fine if you do that for 2 to 3 clients on the lower price to just get the experience on what works and doesn't work. But as soon as you feel really confident in the results, then I would like 3x price. And I also would say, like, I would tell people upfront, hey, I'm charging you a third of what I normally would charge, because this is a relatively new technology that I'm still perfecting, but it does amazing things. I would just say that to them, because I'd say, if this is working great for you in 3 months, I'm going to increase the prices to the standard rate of $4,500 a month or $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month, whatever it is. So I generally lead with honesty, and it actually helps me retain the client and work with them, because what will happen with shitty software and shitty experiences is they're smart people, and they will figure it out, and you'll immediately lose credibility even if they don't tell you. And it makes upsells and cross sells impossible later on. So generally speaking, don't overrepresent what you have and just tell people the bullshit upfront, and you'll do better.
Cool. And then you had said about like pricing out your like cost per acquisition. What if you're doing like social outreach as your lead gen strategy? How do you even price like how much you're spending?
If well, it's just, I mean, if it's you're doing pure organic, like content creation.
No, like also like cold DMs and stuff like that.
But you're doing it yourself.
Me plus the setter.
Okay, so value your time. So like what would your time be? Like what's your hourly rate to replace yourself? So I would say like, generally speaking, like I don't know if you're gonna do pure commission role, but like a standard base on a SDR B2B is 4,000 divided by I'd say like 160, so that's $25 an hour. So I would say like 20, just multiply the amount of hours you're working, track your time on it, and then multiply it by 25 for your hourly, and multiply that by how many people you need to be doing that. It sounds like one person full time, but that would be your cost, and then just divide that into total customers you get from the process over a certain time period or in total, and that will tell you your cost to acquire if that's your method.
Cool. No, that makes too much sense. Bro, you've like cracked so many things that have been in my brain for too long that didn't deserve to be there. So I genuinely appreciate that.
That's why you need a coach.
Yeah.
So I think like this is the first time we've ever done this. So you know, my hourly is 2,000 an hour. So you just got like some real value because you're one of the first people to actually show up. But I'm hoping we'll get some more traction here on this group. This group is like really like just a side thing I decided to put up 8 months ago and I abandoned it. And now I'm coming back to it. I'm like, you know what? I'll just see what happens. I'm just gonna go in there. Maybe I meet some cool people. So, you know, for now you're getting some good stuff. But if you want more hands-on, like, you know, me in a Slack channel with you, like looking at your materials and really cross-checking and giving you gut checks, I'm happy to work with you too if that's of interest in the future.
Cool. Yeah, no, definitely appreciate it. I think I came across you on LinkedIn in case you're wondering where that connection came from.
Cool. Yeah, I saw you on LinkedIn and I just found you as well, but that's good to know. Because I'm also doing my own organic content. I've just started organic content creation for myself in December, like really started it, not actually trying. And I would say that it's been actually eye-opening because it's made all, I'm an outbound expert and I'm extremely good at generating demand without anybody knowing who I am. But now that people recognize me, the conversation's like easy. Like I used to think I was pretty good without that. Now it's like people get on the call and it's like, oh my God, this is like closing is like 10 times easier. So I would recommend anybody who isn't building a personal brand, like just fucking do it because it makes all your other efforts easier.
Cool. I appreciate it, Ben.
Thanks, yeah, thanks bro. For joining. So it's hey Tom or hi Tom?
My parents messed it up. It's supposed to be like a TH in the middle, like hi Tom.
Hi, Tom.
But, yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, we chatted a couple months ago. I don't remember. I'm with Prestige Worldwide Logistics.
Right.
Yeah, we talked about you know, the outbound and the
Dan
Martin.
Right. Yeah, I remember. I didn't recognize you with the hat.
I know. Yeah, I'm literally just chilling on the couch, and I got an email. I'm like, oh, this guy's doing one of the content things, building a personal brand. So I was like, oh, yeah. All right, like, let's jump on to what it's all about.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, cool. I remember. I remember the conversation. How have you been?
Yeah. Good. And you?
Good. Yeah. This is an experiment for me. I don't know if where this will go, but I'm just committed to doing this for the next 12 months once a week. So we'll see if this grows. Feel free to invite people if you guys want to shoot the shit. But I'm trying to, one of my core ideas is that I think entrepreneurs are lonely and
yeah.
I feel lonely. And I want other like entrepreneurial minded people to come and have good conversations. And I haven't found a place to do that. So I'm hoping this weekly call would be a fun place to shoot the shit people.
I think it absolutely will. Because I'm in a few masterminds myself and you know, the personal brand is definitely key and it's kind of like triggered me to ask questions, I guess. Because I have an email drafted to you. I was gonna reach out to you about from our last conversation. So kind of quick update. Like I ended up hiring our EOS integrator, like my right hand man, to basically implement EOS. We're still a lean company, so we're not going to fully implement, but one of the biggest things about like the VTO is like your marketing section, your VTO, your ICP, your all that stuff, you know. And I was following a lot of your content and I was like, man, I came crystal clear on what I don't want to do. And so now it's like, because I think what last you'd mentioned, you're like, kind of recap, I need to regenerate sales for my logistics company. You said the perfect team was the growth marketing marketer, full stack salesperson, and then there was a third thing. I don't know if you remember that. And then, you know, kind of should get like 5-10x on that. So that really stuck. I agreed with that fully. And part of why I wanted to reach back out to you on the side, because, you know, having my EOS guy in house, he's going to bring the vision to life. When we first spoke, I've been doing it for 15 years. I'm just kind of done doing the outbound, right? I want to focus on putting the vision out there and then have somebody actually bring that vision to life. And that's how most visionaries are. It's just a vision, but then you need that right hand man. So to everybody else listening, for sure, build your personal brand. Ben is absolutely right. Your thing is going to blow up. I know it will. I've seen a lot of people try and their stuff sucks. And if you're your first one or two, you're killing it. So keep that going.
Appreciate that.
And again, we'll probably connect out of that after this, because we do want to move forward with some things that you would discuss. But I guess my biggest hang up is, you know, we're trying to figure out the sales and marketing plan. I like the stack people you talked about. My biggest concern is, you know, bringing them in without being crystal clear on our ICP. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm the bottleneck to that. I kind of did the shotgun approach. Got a bunch of accounts, sniped on those. And in the logistics industry, it's constantly changing. Trump went, did the tariff thing yesterday. Things are going to disrupt again. Mm-hmm. So I'm stuck between doing the shotgun approach, which works, but it's not scalable. But yet sniping on, you know, like, so what I'm trying to get at is like, how do I really refine my ICP when it's constantly changing? It shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting that you're bringing this up, because one thing that I've had multiple people say something similar to me in the last couple of weeks, and this is a skill set that I've known how to do, but I didn't realize that I was actually an expert in, which is ICP crafting and creation. And I think it's like, I'm actually thinking of writing a book on this called like How to Discover Your Ideal Customer Profile. And the reason for that is because if you get that wrong, everything else doesn't matter. Like literally everything else. And so I have the 100%. Have I shown you the what matters diagram?
I mean, if you want to share it again, I'm all for it.
Let me share it with you here. So this is the, let me call this, I don't know if we called it the what matters. I know I called it something different.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's
I got it. Here it is.
Where it shows like the product development and the stages underneath it. Or is that not the diagram you're talking about?
Maybe I'll share it right here. So it is this document here. If you guys open that, it's called the growth problem diagnosis. And then if you click on the full diagram link within it, you'll see.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And everything, you got to get each channel or bucket right before you move on.
Right. Exactly. And so let me share my screen for anybody who's watching this outside. So here we are. Let me play this. So, I mean, you can watch the full video, but I'll give you kind of the idea. Is it like everybody thinks they have this problem? And like everyone's like, oh, my sales people suck, you know, or they think something else. And then people think they have it, like the next thing that everyone thinks they have is a demand generation problem. And I'm always just like, no, you don't. You have like an ICP problem, or you have a market size problem, or you have a competition problem, but you probably don't have a demand problem. Because if you figure out these things, you will basically solve most other problems to the right. And so that's the irony, is that like I started as a salesperson. I'm a chief revenue officer. I've built and scaled sales teams. So everyone's like, well, why are you saying this? And I'm like, because I know, because when I have failed, it's not been because we aren't good at sales. It's because something else was bottlenecking our growth. And so I think like I love the saying of like the number one role of a CEO is to identify the biggest constraint in the business and then apply resources to solve for that constraint. And it's the same thing in growth. It's like the biggest responsibility of a chief revenue officer is to identify the biggest constraint to the growth and then to apply resources to solve for that growth. So I think you're on the right track. And I think the ICP is like the most important thing. Now, that brings up the question, though, of like, okay, if that's true, then how do you do it? Now, as you may know, I have like kind of a overview and training in my school group. But aside from that, I would say that there's a much deeper training that I need to think about and put to paper, because I remember 7 years ago, I asked the question of like, how do you do market research? Because I was like really annoyed that I didn't know how to answer the question you're asking right now. And I spent a lot of time like floundering, just like coming up with random people and calling them a bunch and just trying to sell them. And I just thought that was the way to do it. And what I learned was that, yes, you should be calling people, but you shouldn't be blindly doing it. And you need to get clear on a hypothesis. So, and then you have to do what I call a 1,000 conversation test, which nobody wants to hear. But the truth is, like, you have to minimally do 50 conversations. Yeah. And the conversations have to be mom test conversations. And that's where, if you go into my school group where there's the mom test, read that and watch that. But the idea is you come up with a hypothesis of your ideal customer profile, and it has to be so specific that it can't possibly change. Like, if it's changing all the time, then it's not truly your ICP. The ICP has to like literally be one group of people that is what they call cross-referenceable, meaning that if they talk to each other, they would actually believe that other person as a credible resource on a buying decision. And then they have to be far deeper than demographics. So it can't be like Bob's a VP in the oil and gas industry who's at companies between, you know, 100 person headcount to 500. It can't just be, it has to be like Bob specifically is hyper aware that Frank in accounting sucks, you know, like something very specific. Mm-hmm. And what happens then is that you're taking like a 30,000 person list and you're refining it down to like 50 to 100 people.
100%. And that's
like the last thing people want to hear because it crushes their TAM. But the idea is that then it gives you a reasonable place to start, and you can go and do the mom test on those people and find out if you have a good fit. And then you can make the offer, and your offer will be substantially better because you refined it and because you're the only one offering to that very specific problem. So that's my take, is it's much deeper research. Spend like 2 to 3 months on it. Nobody wants to hear that, but that's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, fortunately, we've, you know, been in business for, like I said, you know, going on 15 years. So we have a lot of past customers, and, you know, the common denominator between all of them, it's, you know, the Sally or Susie that's running the entire shipping department for a multi-million dollar, even $100 million company. And they just want somebody to come and just, you know, save the day, right? So kind of that mid-market, top of mid-market. So it's not so much the products, not the demographic, it's more the person we found. But then it's like, how do you find that person? So like a buyer persona. Like, we found the one common denominator between all our clients is the buyer and their persona. But then how do you pinpoint that? That's the next problem we run into. So deeper thoughts to discuss. I don't know, because I know you only got a couple minutes on the call, but that was one of the biggest reasons why I didn't want to like just jump in on the sales side, is because what am I going to tell these people? Like, you know, they're going to come in and if they don't have any industry knowledge, they're just going to tell me the same thing. Go look at your clients, go make these calls, have like a checklist of questions, kind of hear the common denominator, what's their pain points. I'm like, that's so generic. Like, that's what got me to where I'm at today. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to like keep working. It works, but it's not the way I want to keep doing it. I want a little bit more refined way of doing it, so that when we do get some sort of like website built, well, we have our website, but we want to refine it. It's the messaging is so crystal clear, you know? And so, yeah, I think it would be a good time. Maybe I'll grab more time on your calendar to bring in my EOS, because ultimately we do want to move forward with you. So for everybody else that's listening, the guy knows his stuff. I've talked to him a couple of times. I'm in all the masterminds, like I said, and you know they all have good. You definitely need a coach. Listen to the coach. That's also, don't just get a coach and not listen to him.
Yeah, totally.
I have a tendency to do that. So. But yeah, I think kind of when I send the email, you know what I'm talking about. Like, we have an idea of our ICP, we have beta tested it. You know, now we're just kind of like wanting to get an outside perspective on what they think it is. And I think you would be able to like refine it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll say one more thing. We're almost out of time, but I do want to add on to that, which is, this is why I need to like write this into a book, because everything I just described is like the start. But with B2B context, there's far more, right? Because you said there's a buying committee, right? So in the buying committee, you have your influencers, you have your decision makers, your financial decision makers, your end users, your IT group, gatekeepers, your blockers, and your procurement. And so you have all those people. And so the more upmarket you go, the more enterprise you go, the more intense that becomes. So you could literally have five influencers of different department types that all impact the buying decision. And what makes it even more complex is that those buying, those individuals might be at different parts of the structure of the organization. So for example, I'm just going to use oil and gas because I think it's about as complex a sale as you can get, which is you have a Houston-based crew, which is your office. And in there, you might have like mid-level managers that report up to senior executives who report up to like other departments that have kind of IT and procurement that are part of the decision, but they're not the core buying force. And then they don't actually know what's happening at the field level. And the field level might be in a different city, like mid-Texas, where those guys have a hierarchy too, which is executives, mid-management, low management, and field level workers. And the answer of how do you sell into them is knowing who has influence and who knows what the problem is. Because I think ultimately, like, as strange as this sounds, and I'm the only person I've heard talk about this in the context of enterprise sales, but it's like the copywriting Eugene Schwartz's breakthrough advertising on the awareness scale of like everything from unaware to problem aware to solution aware to brand aware and product aware. That that idea is a key guiding framework on how you should be going and identifying your buying committee. Because really what you want to find out is who in the organization knows the problem best. Okay, that's your entry point. So, because the problem with like copywriting or email marketing or advertising or anything is that you can't grab somebody's attention unless they have some deep pain or deep desire to pay attention to it. So if they're like if you went to people and you like ran a horse problem ad, you have a horse problem, you know, back in 1900, or maybe it's like 1850, people would be like, it would be a joke, right? And so it's because they're unaware that cars, there was a solution called vehicles and they could get that. So it's the same idea. Like when I go into a new business, it's like, I want to find out who in the business is suffering relative to what I offer. And then I would want to know why and how, and then I'd want to break down that suffering into what I call the before, the middle, and after, which is they're suffering before they buy from you, while they're buying from you, and after they buy from you. For example, for me, let's say I go to an owner who's doing $1 million and they want to do lead gen, and they're hyper aware of the fact that they don't have leads. Well, they have a very acute problem before they buy. I don't have leads. I don't have revenue. And so there's sub problems relating to that, which is I can't pay my staff. I can't scale my business. I'm stuck in my business. I don't know if I'm good enough. Like there's all these questions, like problems related to that. And so then they might buy from me. They have another set of problems, which is shit, I got to figure out like what my offer is, what my ICP is. I have to figure out who I'm selling. So all these other problems bubble up. And then after the sale and we send them leads, now they're like, shit, I don't know how to fulfill this. I don't know how to manage the leads. I don't know how to follow up with them. So think about your offer in the same way, which is like, you want to start, your entry point is at the before you solve the problem, the most acute problem they're aware of. And within the organization, that might be one guy. Now, sometimes it's the CEO, sometimes it's the field level person. And depending upon where it is, you have different problems that will arise. For example, if it's the field level person, they might be hyper aware about it, but nobody will take them seriously. That's the typical problem at the low end. The alternative is the CEO is hyper aware of it, but nobody wants to change their ways at the field level, so he can't actually impact a decision. And you have what they call a change management problem. So if you go somewhere in the middle, it's like that guy just might be political and he doesn't want to push the envelope and like hurt his career by representing a problem that nobody gives a shit about internally. So depending upon where your entry point is across the organization, you're going to have different headwinds to face and there's different tactics to overcome them. But anyways, that's how I think about it. And to answer that question, you really have to just do a lot more calls and you have to like start to look for these trends. And then you start to like see the typical flow. So for me, WellSite Navigator is an example. I know that there's two entry points. It's either at the field level that works to the mid-level manager in the field that then gets to a mid-level manager at Houston who brings in HS&E, who brings in IT, who brings in procurement. That's one path. Alternatively, there's another path, which is you go find a senior level HS&E person who's really concerned about safety, who then introduces you to a mid-level operational manager in the field, who then brings in five of his guys to do a pilot. They prove it out, and then it goes back up the food chain. I know that not because I'm like a fucking genius. It's because I've gone and I've tried this 1,000 times. So that's the way to think about it, but it just still takes a lot of work.
Yeah, no, for sure. We'll be in touch.
Cool, man. Thank you guys for joining. I know that there's value for you, but it's actually valuable to me too, because I was joking with Alan before I jumped on. I was like, I think anyone's going to show up. So this, you're the first people here. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks again.
Bye.